It's good to see you all here tonight. We're thankful, and I should say I am personally thankful that you have been here. Some of you I've seen every night. Wonderful. It says a lot about you as a congregation, and I would like to just extend my personal thanks to all of you. You've been so gracious. You've been so kind. I don't even know exactly where to start, I almost feel like at the end of the Wizard of Oz, oh, and you, and I'm so thankful about you. I don't know how to thank everybody for all. I feel just at home. You've just made me feel just like at home, and I'm so grateful that I have a whole lot more brothers and sisters and mothers and grandmothers and little baby cousins. We're all in one big happy family here, and I feel I feel like I'm home with you guys. So, and you can't fake some of that things. And, you know, there's a true love that's here for the brethren, and I hope that you keep that love. When Jesus says, and I'm going to give you a new commandment, and this is that you love one another, because by this the world you'll know that you're my disciples. The world doesn't care whether you immerse in baptism or if you sprinkle or if you don't do anything at all. By and large, the world doesn't care whether you sing with a piano, without a piano, with a band, or not sing at all. The world doesn't care about a whole lot of things, whether even you meet on the first day of the week or the seventh day of the week. What the world cares is, how do they love one another? That's what they see. That's what impresses them. So keep that love going. It's what you guys got going for you. It's a good thing. Just keep it up. Endeavor to keep the unity in the spirit and the bond of peace. And I so appreciate those of you who did the scripture readings. The scripture readings are not just, oh, this is just something else that we have to do. You see, all through the service, we get to sing praises to God. We get to pray to God. We get to hear lessons. But there's only one time in the entire service where God is actually speaking to us, and that's when the scripture is read. And that's why it's a big deal, because God is speaking. We happen to have the physical person here who is actually speaking, but actually it is God speaking through us. And actually, in its most literal sense, that's what it actually means to prophesy. It actually means to speak for God. Doesn't mean fortune telling, even though that when you prophesy, you do talk about a future event. In fact, I'll prophesy for you right now. You ready? I'm fixing to prophesy. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved, and he who believes not shall be condemned. That's not coming from me. That's coming from God. That's about some future event. So let's leave prophesying where it is. That's exactly why the church was supposed to prophesy, other than doing some of the other things that they were doing in Corinth. All right, enough of that stuff. You're not here to hear that lesson. You're here to hear this lesson about what a godly mother gives her children. We are at the very end of our series on building strong homes. We started with a real large idea of the generation that we're in. And then we tried to narrow it down to the first and second generations of Christians within us. We even talked on Saturday morning about handling the Lord's money and how as a Christian we need to be good stewards of that. So it even backed up farther than that. And then we moved on into the realm of what it means to actually be a Christian and trying to do things in the Christian way. And we talked about that last night, about being a peculiar people and actually being the new normal. When the rest of the world just seems to be so out of whack, the Christian is one who is going to look differently than everyone else. And if it's going to start someplace, let it start with us. And now we're coming down to what a godly mother gives her children. And we take our reading from the book of Titus, when it talks about some of the characteristics that women in the church should have, and that they may teach the older women have a role and they have a place where they can show what it's like to be an older woman, what it's like to be a mother or a grandmother. How do these little ones know what it's like? They have to have an example. And let's hope that example is a good one. And I always thought it strange, though, that they have to teach their the young ones how to love their husbands. I mean, what's with that? I mean, you know, everybody knows about love. You know, it's hugging and kissing and all that kind of stuff. That's what love is. Well, no, actually, love is you love your husband when he's not lovable. You're still there when he's ugly, when he comes home, maybe he's in a bad mood or whatever. You still love him. You still stay there. You stay committed. And so when they see that you are hanging in there in spite of everything that's out there, that's what it means to teach the younger ones what it means to love your husbands and love your children and love your family. Out of all the things that my dad ever gave me, I mean, he gave me a lot of things. I mean, I can remember one time he gave me my very first electric guitar. And that was a big deal. But out of all the things that my dad ever gave me, the best gift he ever gave me is that he was with my mother until he died. It was never, ever in our psyche as a whole family is that you just try it out. If it don't work out, then you can say goodbye. That was never, ever, ever even talked about. It was always assumed that it's one man and one woman for life. And so that's what it means for a godly mother, I mean, for a woman, an older woman, to know what it's like to be in those situations and to be able to show by their example how they are still there. Besides giving her children life, a God-fearing mother gives her children so much more. There's a lot of things that she gives them. And it's not Christmas parties and birthday parties. I mean, I know that it seems to be in vogue today that you take a two-year-old and then you go rent a building someplace and then you have like a Jurassic Park theme all around it, you know, and it's these big events that go on. And I mean, I know it's a fun type of thing, but really that's fun. That's okay. I'm not saying this is a sin. I'm just saying that when we plan our whole life about doing things like this and just Christmas parties and birthday parties and things like this, a godly woman doesn't always give her children what they cry for. That's not necessarily love. She doesn't give them what they cry for. She doesn't spoil her children. The idea of giving children everything that they cry for is not necessarily teaching them anything, because it's easier to spoil your children than to teach them. Every day, you have a job, Mom, and your job is to teach your children. And we talked about this the other night, about when someone has two or three little ones and they're struggling with them, they have diaper bags, and they have all this stuff that they have to carry around, and the baby's teething and all this, why in the world do I even come to services? I'm not getting anything out of it. And some of you ladies probably know that you've been there before, and you're saying, why in the world do I even do this? I am not getting anything out of it. And the answer to that question, as we talked about last time, is it's not about you. It's what are your children getting out of that? They're learning that there is something that is so important to Mom that she's willing to put up with all this mess. And she's willing to do that because this is important. And that eventually they learn that this is important. If it's important for Mom, it's important for us too. That precious newborn baby, you know, about the, how in the world does she turn into Veruca Salt? That's who that is, if you're Willy Wonka people. How in the world does this precious little child turn into this spoiled brat over a period of just a few years? How is it that the child can learn to manipulate the parents? Have you ever seen it that, maybe you haven't seen it from this position here, but some of you who preach, there are some kids who learn that all they've got to do is just be just a little bit fussy as soon as it's time for something to start, and then you see them out in the hall and they're walking back and forth, or they take them back to the playroom, not the cry room, but they take them back to the playroom, and they're getting their way, and they're getting exactly what they want. We used to call that room the House of Pain. Because when you leave those pews and you go back, you're going back to the house of pain. That's another reference to Dr. Moreau's Island, by the way, for those of you people into literature. And so they go back to the house of pain, and they know that when they go back there, it's not going to be fun. And after a while, they say, sitting here and maybe just doing a little bit of coloring book or listening, whatever, is preferred to going back to the house of pain. But there again, children can learn to manipulate their parents. They'll cry and make a big, they'll make a big fit, even at a store, because they want a toy. This comes from the internet, and this comes from the experts, and so if you wonder if your child is spoiled, these are the questions you should ask yourself. I'm not going to try to editorialize. I'm just going to read them. Does he or she stop when you say stop? Does he seem to fight about almost anything and argue about anything? Is it difficult to keep them happy? Does he beg for unnecessary toy as though it was as necessary as food? Does he disregard other family members' wants and needs? Does he throw uncontrollable tantrums on a regular basis? If you can say yes to two or more of those, that kid is spoiled. That child is spoiled, according to the experts. And I think I tend to agree with that, with that conclusion. That child has learned now to get exactly what he wants because he has his parents trained to do his bidding. And that ought not to be. It ought not to be. Godly mothers give their children what they need. My grandma used to sing that all the time, well before the Rolling Stones, about you can't always get what you want. You get what you need. And sometimes you need to go out and get tuned. That's what you need. So, a godly mother knows the difference, and they know when to say when, but they also know to say no when it's necessary. And so that's what a godly mother will do. She'll give their child what they need, not always what they want. What they need is respect. What they need is respect. In Ephesians chapter 6, it says, children, this is for you. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Now, under the old law, there was a good reason why you honored mother and father. Because if you didn't, and if you were rebellious, they would take you outside the camp, and they would stone you to death. Well, I suppose that would be a good way to teach them. That was under the old law. Now, the problem is today, there's a lot of kids who are especially in high school, and they disrespect their parents because they are stoned, not because they got stoned. And the Bible talks about it's the first commandment with promise. The promise is that you'll still get to live. But moving on, Proverbs 31, verse 28, the woman who is godly and teaches her children about respect and teaches about that gets respect. That is because her children rise up and call her blessed. Do you ever notice those sappy country songs? They always talk about home and mama, right? Gonna go to see mama. And those old, that C.B. McCall guy. He did that song that was called Roses for Mama. Today's her birthday, and they talk about all that. And when you talk about home, you always talk about mama. And it's always going home to see mama. And her children rise up and call her blessed because that is the type of respect that she has earned herself. It's expected for older people as well. And that is why moms teach their children to respect those who are older. There is nothing wrong with demanding they say yes, sir, and no, ma'am, to those who are older. And I know in the South, it's almost one of those things, it's unheard of if you have some children and If one child would say, would you like something? Yeah. They get taken right out. There's no yeah. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. Of course, that's the way they roll in Georgia. But I mean, it's up here as well. But the idea is that until those children are forced to remember their manners by their mothers, it's not going to happen any other way. And so a godly mother teaches her children not only to respect her, but also to respect others. Proverbs 16, verse 31 says, the silver-haired head is a crown of glory if, there's the big if now, if it is found in the way of righteousness. Just because a person has survived 80 years sometimes doesn't mean that they have done a lot of things to deserve or earn respect. But nevertheless, if a person is older, they are to be at least courteous to some who's outside. And moving on to Leviticus 19, verse 32, you shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an older person and fear your God. I am Jehovah. So that's what one thing a godly mother gives her children. It is the idea of respect. Respect for her and respect for others. Respect is something that must be earned and fostered by diligent adults. I've seen this, and maybe you have too. One time we were down in Florida, and we went to one of Jason's friend's house, and I dropped him off, and he came in, and he said, thanks for letting me come over, Mrs. Smith. And I can remember this, and she says, oh, don't call me Mrs. Smith, just call me Kathy. It's always Mrs. Smith. And Jason, if I ever hear you call her Kathy, I'm going to take you out and tune you. Because it's Mrs. Smith. She's not your buddy. She's not your pal. She is your friend's mom. And it's Mrs. Smith. And it's yes, ma'am, and it's no, ma'am. Trying to be friends with your children, especially when they're in high school, is because, you know, I've got to be the cool mom. I've got to be the cool dad. I've got to be the one who is everybody's buddy. No, it's written in your contract, parents. You got to be the bad guy. And there's a lot of times you got to be a bad guy because they expect you to be the bad guy. Hey, everybody's going to go out to party and Jeff's parents aren't even going to be there. Y'all want to come? I'd like to, but my mom won't let me go. You got to be willing to let them throw you under the bus because that's what it's all about. Because there comes a time when they're going to truly grow up. And some of you guys who are in school, if you want to know how it is that you feel like you're starting to be an adult, what does it mean to be an adult? Well, here's the first marker. Do you not go to that party because mom and dad's going to throw a fit? Or you not go to that party because it's a sin of what's going to go on there? When you base all of your decisions not upon what mom or dad thinks is going to do or won't do, and when you base all of your decisions on, is this what God would expect me to do? There's the first indication that you're becoming an adult. And so, yes, you've got to be the bad guy. You have to be the authority. Because what goes in this house, she is the authority. She is the keeper of the home. Yeah, dad's the head. But she's the one who is the keeper of the home. But she has to see herself as that. There's a lot of times that there are women who just feel overwhelmed. They may have a couple of rambunctious children, and there's nothing wrong with rambunctious. You know, please, you don't need to put them on drugs just to calm them down. You have to learn how to channel it somehow. But with a couple of rambunctious children, you can channel that energy into the right place. But sometimes you feel almost helpless because, they're getting up from the table and they're eating in the living room. And I don't want them eating in the living room. And they're coloring and they do this and they don't do that. And I just don't know what to do. Well, what you need to know is that you are the boss. This is your house. This is your home. This is your rules. In fact, what Annette did, I'll just use her, I'll say Frankie and Annette, okay? Well, what Annette did was that she put up a bunch of rules and she wrote them on a refrigerator. If you get down from the table, your food's gone. There's no coming back, it's gone. As soon as when you get on your feet, you lose your seat and there's your meal, it's gone. And don't come crying because if you're hungry at 9 o'clock, mom serves breakfast at 9 a.m. Deal with it. Because mom has two choices when she makes supper. It's either take it or leave it. Those are the two choices that you get. She is the authority. And if you're not supposed to be bringing your toys into the living room, every time they drag their toys and bring it in the living room, you grab it, throw it in the trash can, or throw it away. after a while, they get the picture who's the boss. But you have to assert that. You are the authority because you are the queen of your domain. The home is not a democracy. It's not about, oh, let's vote on this. There is no democracy. You're the king and queen are at home. They rule, and they tell their subjects exactly what it is that they want them to do. And this is another mistake that moms make. And maybe you haven't thought of it. They're always asking questions. Would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? Would you want this? Why do we ask our children permission to clean their room? We're going to give you two choices. Clean your room, or I'll clean it for you. And when I clean it for you, there's not going to be anything to come back to. And Paula knows how our Aunt Tessie is. She told the kids, you're not going to eat in the living room. And if you do, just pick up your plate and put it in the kitchen. Well, our son didn't want to do that. So there was half a plate of spaghetti sitting on the table there and a half a glass of Pepsi. And what she did is she took the plate, she walked over to his room, opened the door, threw it on top of his bed, and shut the door. That was the last time he ate in the living room without cleaning up. That's what you do. She's mean. And yet Paula kept coming back. It's just because they also respect authority. They need to know where their parameters are. They need to know that there are limits, and they will test you. I promise you they will test you because they need to know just how far it is that they can go. And it's up to you to set those rules and set those boundaries and stick to them because they're your rules. You cannot reason with the unreasonable. And have you ever seen that out of store? There's a Walmart, and this little kid, he just got his little fist clenched like this, and they're trying to reason with him about things like this. I've heard this. Now, remember last week about the discussion we had about sharing? Remember that, Jesse? Remember? They don't remember about that. Mother will never get respect until they demand it. But if they haven't demanded it all along, then they wonder how come their teenagers are unruly. My mom used to have this theory. Son, I don't care how tall you are, but an elbow to your solar plexus puts us right on eyeball level. And she'd done that a couple of times. And it's yes, ma'am. It's yes, ma'am. Because we're talking about discipline now. Spanking is a means of demanding respect for authority. And children require the limits. Let's just go ahead and find out what the Bible has to say about that. I've been rambling on. Now let's look at some passages. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, and the rod of correction will drive it far from him. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Proverbs 23:13. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he won't die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. And finally, Proverbs 29:15 says, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Interesting that mother is being at, not father. It's because who is the primary disciplinarian in the home? It's mom. She's with the children more. And yes, wait till your father gets home because good old Shrek, that's your father, he's going to come in. He's the ogre. He's going to come in and beat you half senseless. Really, though, my wife never had to mess with that. I never had to mess with that because my wife took care of it. And you know what it says, like mother, like daughter? A while back, Erin, my daughter, was taking her youngest little boy, Jude, into one of those kitchen stores. And he looks up and says, Mama, look at all those whipping spoons. He knows what it's all about. But a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And a mother gives her children the attention that they need. Communication is the key to any relationship. God expects parents to be communicating with the children. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, I know it doesn't speak specifically to mothers. It just basically talks to adults who have children. And so it says, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, mothers and fathers. You shall talk with them when you sit in your house." And usually who's sitting in a house all day, especially in this context, it's mothers. "You shall walk by the way when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And there's nothing wrong with having that. "And as for me and my house, we will follow the Lord." And it's not bad to have those little sayings in your home. You need to pay attention to your children. Joshua chapter 4, verses 5 through 7, Joshua said to the people, "Cross over before the ark of Jehovah your God into the midst of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time coming, saying, 'What do these stones mean to you?' Then you shall answer them that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of Jehovah. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial to the children of Israel forever." And the reason why we say this is that we need to make sure that our children know why it is that we go to services on Sunday morning. Why do we do this? We teach about Jesus. We teach about the sacrifice that he made for us. And we may not talk in the most technical of terms, but we go to give Jesus respect. And it's a memorial service to him. And that's what we do that for, as a memorial. It helps us to remember why we're here. It's not just because we get out of the house for an hour on Sunday morning or Sunday night. It's not for any of that. It's not because we get to go to Dairy Queen or someplace else, because it's just not someplace you go on your way to get ice cream. This is why we come together. We have to make sure that we keep those memorials at the front of their minds. And we give our children an education, because education is the key to advancement. Paul was educated, and there's nothing wrong with being educated in the systems where it is. But formal education needs to be paired with spiritual training. And so Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says this: "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Now, you've seen some people's children and how they turned out. That this son is just as unfaithful as ever, and that daughter may be unfaithful as ever. So the parents must have been a failure in training up their children, right? That's not what that passage is talking about. "Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, it won't depart from him." He still knows what he's doing is wrong. It's still his choice, though. That part never leaves. He knows what's right. She knows what's wrong, yet they still choose to do it, because mama has taught them what it really means to do what is right and what it means to do wrong. And if she hasn't, well, then shame on her, because now the onus is on her as well. We use that passage about those who would lead someone astray. It'd be better if they had a millstone hung about their neck and they were cast into the sea. So there is a responsibility, mom, that you make sure that they know what's right and what's wrong. And you don't have to go and say, "Well, Matthew 13 says this, or Matthew 15 says this, or Matthew 7 says this. My grandma just says the good book says." And that's enough. The good book says you do to other people like you would have done to you. You want someone ruining your toys? Then why you ruin his toys? You want someone to slap you? Then why are you slapping him? The good book says to do what's right. And part of a complete education is not mathematics and history and science. A complete education starts with a spiritual education as well. Singing the Bible school songs back in Bible class, that's wonderful. They need to be sung also at home. Knowing the books of the Bible, or knowing, giving your children quizzes throughout the day. What's the 40th book of the Bible? Hopefully somebody know what it is. It's Matthew. Because why? Because the 39th book is Malachi. You can use math. You can, give me the first, fifth, and 10th book of the Bible and make games out of it. So keep the education where it is. But I'll tell you what, I know some of you are homeschooling. God bless you. God bless you. You are making a sacrifice and investing in your children. It's hard to do. It's hard to do it on a day-by-day basis. But there also comes a time when you have to let go. When you have to trust them now to be able to take up their part in society, especially if they're becoming at work age or this or that. And it's still a matter of trust. We can only shelter them for so long. But eventually, it does come to a place where we're going to have to make sure that we prepare them to be an adult, to be a mother of their own or a father on their own. And one thing a parent should do is curtail the media. Unlimited TV time is not good. TV makes a horrible babysitter. I mean, how many of you would invite people into your living room to use foul language? How many of you would you invite people, would you willingly invite someone into your living room to engage in some things that people might say, go get a room? And how many of you would you do that willingly? Well, that's what happens when you turn on some of those TV shows. You are just bringing that stuff right into your, you're bringing strangers into your house and they're doing ungodly things. So we have to make sure that we know what our children are watching. That's why the TVs are always in the living room where everybody can be watching them. That's why the computer now needs to be in a public place, not in somebody's room. And if you don't know how to block their kids' tablets from the internet, I can tell you. I have a little program called Router 101. You can knock them off. And they can't get out no matter what they try. But moving on. There's other things to do. Read a book. Finish your homework. Play outdoors. And I should have had zero on there because it's the most important one. Get your Bible class lesson done. That's the first thing. Why is it that we are, if you get a B in algebra, you are in big trouble. And so you better do your algebra. Well, now, and then if you have time, do your Bible class lesson. The Bible class lesson needs to be first. Well, I don't have time to do it. Well, we're talking about time management. Okay, I'm telling you what's the most important. You get that part done, and then you do your algebra. And if you have to stay up till 1 o'clock, well, so be it. Maybe you'll learn to manage your time a little bit better. Mothers realize the danger of bad influences. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 talks about evil companions. Evil communication corrupts good morals, corrupts good manners, whichever way you want to say it. And you know, that verse is true 9 times out of 9. You can't run with the goats Grandma always says, you don't run with the goats without smelling like them. And that's she was right. And mom and dad know what goats look like. Sometimes their kids don't. Get that? Get the pun? Their kids don't? No, never mind. All right. Sometimes they don't understand what the goats really look like, but mom and dad do. And so, yes, sometimes you have to be the bad guy. You can't go to Tommy's house. Now, if you want to bring Tommy over here, yes. Tommy can stay, and he can play in the yard, whatever. And if Tommy gets out of line, we're going to send him back on home because he doesn't know how to behave himself. But you're not going over to Tommy's house. Moving on. Financial prudence. Receiving money is linked to work. Children who work for the things they want will be better, will take care of them before anything just given to them. Oh, well, I cut a toy and I break it. Oh, well, throw it away. Mama, I want a new toy. I'll tell you what, you want a new toy? All right, go cut some grass or do this or do that, and maybe you'll get that new toy. I know that I left a bike out in the rain, and it was a brand new Zephyr, and I left it out in the rain because I got it for Christmas, and I couldn't wait to go down the ball field, and I was just left out in the rain, and it got all rusty, and I didn't get another bike, but then I went and bought I had to go and earn in money, and then I went and got another bike, and that bike stayed inside. It never got out in the rain. There's honor in working for what it is that you have. And so working for it is good. Children should not be paid to do chores, because every child has the responsibility to be part of this family. And this is your chore, and this is your job, and this is your job. And I know sometimes, as much as it pains you, let them do their chores. I don't know what it is about a garbage bag, but have you noticed that if you have a son who has a garbage bag and he picks it up here, with every step it gets incrementally heavier. And it can only make it to right here. And then you have to get on him and he has to pick it up, and he might be able to make it to halfway to the door. And then maybe he might make it over to the door. And heaven forbid if he could even actually find the strength to take it all the way out to the garbage can. And after a while, it gets old. I know it gets old. But that's his contribution to this family. Her contribution to the family may be laundry, or it may be cleaning or dusting or whatever it is. But we all have jobs to do, because we're a family. We're a unit. We work together. We don't work for our children, and your mama don't work for the electric company either. So turn the lights off. If a mother does not teach her son a trade, as the proverb says, then she teaches him how to steal. I tend to agree with that proverb. The money they earn and save, though, is still not theirs. It doesn't stop there. If that's all we talked about here, then we're shortchanging our children, because self-sacrifice is part of it. And whatever they earn, even if whatever it is, it's not their money. It's the Lord's money. How much are they willing to sacrifice? It still belongs to the Lord. Oh, I worked real hard for that. You know, I had to deliver all these papers. Who gave you two good legs to walk on? Who gave you a good arm to throw? You know little Brent down the road? He was born without arms. He can't go throw newspapers like you can. It's not your money. God gave you the talents. He gave you the abilities. Shouldn't you give them? And really, whatever it is that they give, it's a valuable lesson. My grandma always told me that for every time that you get a dollar, you put a nickel back into your piggy bank, you put a dime in and give it to the Lord, and let the other 85 cents take care of itself. And she is right. You can't outgive God anyhow. And at any level, they are learned to give as they then prosper, because that is another lesson that you teach, self-sacrifice. Acts chapter 20, the very last part of that says, it's more blessed to give than to receive. When you're a child, you don't understand that. But after a while, you do. You get pleasure in being able to give to somebody else who doesn't have. My granddaughter even learned that, about being able to share with somebody else because they didn't have some school materials. And she was able to get them for her. And she says, you know what? That feels real good. That feels good. It is more blessed to give than it is to receive. We have to teach our children not to be selfish, because it's a natural tendency for all of us to be selfish. But mothers give their children something even more valuable than all that. It's a sense of place. Home is not just a building. Home is where your heart is. I know that sounds like an old cliche, but it's true, because it's not a geographical area. It's an area of the heart. And so where mom is, that's where home is. I've heard people say before, I'm going to go back home. Well, I've lived in Texas for 40 years, but I'm going to go back home. Why? Because that's where mom is. Texas should be your home. Well, it's a place that's our domicile, but mom's in Ohio, and I'm going to go back home. She teaches them that the church is their home. And it's their home because it's her home. That's what she teaches, because we're not alone, because we are connected to the body. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it talks about us being all members of one body. And we have different functions. We have arms and legs and eyes, and they all don't do the same thing, but they're all connected. They're joined because this is home. I hope that you feel that you came home tonight, because this is home. Yes, you're going to go back to your domiciles, but hopefully this is home. This is where your family is. This is where you have fellowship. And mom teaches that to her children. It's that important. Mothers teach their children their attitudes. If they're optimistic and they're thankful, their children learn to be optimistic and thankful. I love you. I appreciate you. Those should be words that are heard all the time. And even when something bad happens, Romans chapter 8, verse 28 says that all things happen for good for them who love the Lord. Now, how can, I'll use an illustration, falling down and cutting your eye. How can that be good? Well, it can be. I don't know. Sometimes we don't even know how it can be good, but all things happen to good for those who love the Lord. You think about it. What good was it when God led a group of about 2 million people out of Egypt and he parked them right at the edge of the Red Sea, and there comes the Egyptian army down to kill them all? What good can that be? You know that they were right in the will of God. God's the one who led them there. It still works out for good, because Moses says, now you watch what happens. Sometimes we have to be led to the brink of the Red Sea ourselves, and the Egyptians are marching down our necks. And then God parts the waters somehow. We have to understand that all things happen for good. Even though that they don't actually turn out the way we like them to do, sometimes they're even better. They realize it's valuable to be grateful, because in 1 Thessalonians it says, in everything give thanks. Yes, in everything give thanks. Ephesians 5 and verse 20 talks about being thankful as well. So we have to realize that we have to give thanks always for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Because the Bible tells us that that's what we should do. And then they teach about, godly mother will teach their children about religious commitment. The thing that bothers me the most about our rulers in Washington is they try to give away something that they don't have. They'll take money out of your pockets and give it to somebody else. But for a mother to be able to give her children faith, she has to have some. That's the only way you can give them faith, is you have to have it. You have to have a personal faith as well. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5 says, he talks in this case here to Timothy. He says, when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, Timothy. Now, how did you get that, Timothy? Which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice. That's how Timothy had his faith, because his mother and grandmother had faith to give. And the duty rests on our shoulders as parents. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, it says, and you fathers, and in some translations it says, and you parents. I don't know exactly if that's an accurate translation or not, but we'll use it. And you parents, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. I can remember this, because this was something that my son and I, and well, Teresa and I both, we had this thing with my son. I don't understand why I have to be in 11 o'clock. That's stupid. Well, that's our rules. But it's a stupid rule. Okay, it's a stupid rule. But you're going to be home at 11 o'clock because your stupid mom and your stupid dad want you to follow this stupid rule. And then Jason thought he was going to be cute. Well, you know, you're bringing up your children to be wrath. You know, you're raising your children to have wrath here. That didn't work either. You can misquote the scriptures all you want. But there again, nothing good happens. Funny thing about it is that when he went to Florida College, he was in bed at 9 o'clock every night. So much for I'll stay up as late as I want to. But whose job is it anyway? Is it the government's job to raise your children? I certainly hope not. Governments don't raise children, families do. In your handout, if you have your handout, just read this recipe for raising children. It's at the very bottom of your handout. You take 1 cup of Proverbs 22, verse 6, and then you take 2 tablespoons of Proverbs 19, verse 13, You take a dash of Proverbs 23:13, a teaspoon of Proverbs 3:5, a half a cup of Titus 2:3-7, and please add a pinch of Ephesians 6 and verse 4. You mix all ingredients and a pound of persistence and one cup of love and whip it until you get the right consistency. And I thought maybe that's a good recipe for y'all, for you ladies, because I know you like recipes. But I see by the clock on the wall, it's time to go. Well, gang, it's time for us to go. I'd like to personally thank you one more time for giving me this opportunity and this privilege of having a chance to know y'all. It's wonderful. I've got and I do mean it. I mean, Laura says she's going to come down. We'll see. But anytime you find yourself in an Atlanta area, give us a call. And if you would like to have our bulletin, see that either one of your elders get that or give it to me or whatever. Give it to your elders because they can send it to me at one time and we'll add you to our mailing list if you'd like to receive one of our bulletins. But y'all come. We'd love to have you. Not all at once. Don't all decide y'all are going to come at one time now, okay? But we'd love to have you. But now we want to offer an invitation. We want to offer an invitation for anyone who may be here tonight and have been thinking about the responsibility they have. Moms, maybe you've dropped the ball a little bit. Maybe you don't think that you have actually been doing what it is that you should have been doing. Not too late. It's never too late. You start today. That's all. You always have today. If you've been an unfaithful child of God and you need to be baptized for remission of your sins, if you're willing to die tonight, because that's what you're going to do, if you are willing to die, Jesus will die with you. He will be buried with you. And he will also rise with you. That's what baptism is. It's an act of faith. Calling on the name of the Lord, repenting. If you need to be baptized tonight, make that happen. If you're an unfaithful child of God and you're like the prodigal and you're just out there, just drifting along, isn't it time to get some structure back? Isn't it time to come back to the family where there's going to be rejoicing? Let's hope that you have enough strength and courage to do the right thing tonight. You know, I like a story that was told about what Jesus did for us, and I think I'd like to share it with you because I like that story. If you imagine a family out for a Sunday drive, and you know how a Sunday drive is in the springtime, well, on a normal springtime, you drive with the windows down, and so you're driving down the road. And the whole family's there, and they're singing songs about the wheels on the bus go round and round, and you know, and just having a good old time. And then this bee flies in to the car. Now, your daughter or son is allergic to bees, and they know that if a bee stings her, it's going to hurt. So she yells, "Daddy, Daddy, there's a bee in the car." And and we don't have anything for allergies, or whatever. You got to get rid of the bee, and she's afraid. And so the father stops the car, and he rolls the window up, and he sees the bee on the windshield like that, and he puts his hand like this because he's going to keep that bee from flying around. And then what happens is, pow. And he opens up his hand because you know it hurts. And now the bee is out and he's flying around again. And the little girl says, "Daddy, Daddy, there's a bee and it's going to sting me." And the father says, "Honey, that bee is not going to hurt you. Look at my hand. See that stinger? Bee only has one stinger. He can only sting once." And the reason I use that illustration is because, you see, if you look at the hands of Jesus, he took the sting for us. He took the hurt and the sting for us, and it's in his hand. And so all Satan can do is just buzz. He just relegated Satan to nothing but a bee who can do nothing but buzz. So you have nothing to fear when you're back in Christ. Outside of Christ, those stings are going to come over and over and over again. And the worst sting is the second death. Why do you want to bet your life on an eternity of sting like that? Come back home. Come back home while you have time and place. And do so now as we sing our song of invitation.
Oh Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving. I'll be a living sanctuary.